The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. It is our third and, let me check, yes, our final hour together. Nobody else's show I'm doing today. Had a great time on the Larry Elder Show last night. That's always fun. So I tell you what, anything else we got to do together today, let's make sure it is in this hour. We're going to leap back to your calls. I got some stuff I haven't played for you yet, things I haven't said to you yet. But let us take our continuing journey through the very, very interesting and now just 12 days away from this election to fill the state Senate District 30 vacancy as that proud Senator Pat Fallon leaves a great legacy in the Texas legislature to go begin a legacy in Congress. Mr. Fallon will be the successor to John Ratcliffe in Texas Congressional District number 4, leaving a vacancy in Senate District 30 special election in short order. Boom, here we are. Early voting underway right now. We have spoken to Shelley Luther. We have spoken to Drew Springer. We will tomorrow, we've spoken to Craig Carter. We will tomorrow speak to the mayor of Denton, Chris Watts. Jacob Minter is an actual Democrat running in there. Love to talk to him. He's welcome to be on the show, too. Joining us right now out of Decatur, Texas, is Andy Hopper. Andy, welcome. Pleasure to have you. How you doing, sir?
Hey, Mark. Hey, it's great to hear you. I'm really appreciate you having me on the show. I've been looking forward to this.
Thank you. It's my enormous pleasure. You've had an interesting life. Some of it out in the country, decidedly low tech. You're in Decatur now, but some of it high tech. Has most of your career been as a software engineer?
You know, it has, Mark. But, you know, my uncle used to have a car that said little oil, little plumber, little ranching, little tire. That's kind of me. We've got a lot of different things going on.
Renaissance man. What made it so you're living life, doing whatever it is you're doing, and then that multi-faceted life. And then you see this vacancy crop up. What made you decide, hey, I need to run for that thing?
Well, here's the thing. I've always been passionate about the 10th Amendment and the idea that the best folks to decide what is right for Texas is Texans. And I you know, it's one of the things you can only throw your shoe through the TV so many different times. And this is one of those things that I've been kind of toying with and thinking about. And then this popped up and I said, hey, this is a great equalizer. You are going to have the quality voters that are going to get out there and do their research and decide, hey, do I agree with this guy's principles? And that's one of the things we did the first day is just sat down. I wrote down every word of my platform. It's extremely extensive, and it just reflects what I believe. And I am very passionate about Texas, and that's why I'm running.
So I went to sort of the issues page and the home page, and I said, let's see what somebody wants to put up there first. And I always go looking for what's the differences in a big race like this between you and other candidates. And the things you chose to go to first, you're right up front there with the Alamo issue, the notion of it being remembered, not reimagined. Tell me what you mean by that and why that's important.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you see these folks tearing down monuments all over the state, and it hurts me. I have a minor in history, and I love history. But the thing is that as a Texan, as a person who serves in the Texas State Guard, I believe that we need to honor the folks that actually stood up to Texas when the call was made and died for the state in some cases. And those folks, I mean, are they bought the blood underneath our feet. And the idea that the Alamo is anything but a shrine of Texas liberty, it pains me. And, you know, if you don't support and remember the Alamo, I don't think you have any business being in elected office. So that's, I mean, number one, we cannot be Texans if we let the Alamo turn into some sort of reimagined, mission instead of being what it is, which is a place where folks died for the state.
Andy Hopper is here. The website is Hopper4, the number 4, Hopper4, TXSenate.com, Hopper4. numeral 4, txsenate.com. I also go looking for things. A lot of people's web pages can be kind of boilerplate, kind of general, and all of which is good stuff. But you, for a particular reason, said the Texas legislature should enact legislation to end daylight saving time in Texas. What's that about?
You know, that is hilarious because that is one of those issues that I've got a huge amount of folks chuckling, but like, you're right. I am totally voting for you for that. And it's funny because I actually have one comment of a guy that was really negative about this, but you know, generally speaking, folks really hate changing their time. It doesn't make sense. It's the 21st century. Our lives don't run based upon what angle the clock, arm is pointing to. It doesn't make sense to sit there and change the time a couple times a year. People hate it. Let's just leave it alone. Get up when it gets light, and let's go to work. You know.
Do we leave it standard time or leave it? Do we leave it the way it is now or leave it the way it is over the winter?
You know, I'm not opinionated about that.
Exactly. Just pick one.
I think we'll just leave it on summertime, quite honestly.
You know, listen, that works for me. All right, listen, let's go to some other things that might be somewhat more common. And with everybody running, I think you guys have had some group meetings and stuff, as much as one can these days. Have you noticed any particular position that either only you hold or that seems to be particularly rare, but it's something on your platform that says, hey, here's a reason why you ought to vote for me?
Right. Well, you know, we talked about this yesterday, and I think that it's important to recognize that during this campaign, I think that I was the only one or one of the only candidates in the initial forums that basically was pro-school choice, pro-vouchers. Now everyone, I think, is on record as saying that they're pro-school choice and pro-vouchers because as we've gone through Parker County, Cook County, Denton, you get cheers. I mean, I think 2020 is the year that we're basically rethinking the idea that, hey, school can be done different ways. We've been through a pandemic. There were different ways to educate my kids, and some of them work better and are more flexible. And a lot of folks are home now. A lot of folks are not going back to work because their employers say, hey, we sent you home and you're more productive there. They want to be with their kids. They want to have the flexibility. So distance learning is a thing. Charter schools have gotten much more popular this year. Homeschooling as well. Even in our circles, we know so many folks that have reached out to my wife that said, hey, you know, we haven't homeschooled, but we're going to homeschool now. So I think that's one of those issues. I think we've made a difference in this race.
There are a couple of lenses in talking to a bunch of people. There's some folks who are sort of setting some standards and saying, I meet this standard. Let's see if everybody else does. I guess we could call this, how pro-life are you? Or do you believe that Roe v. Wade ought to be overturned?
Absolutely. I don't think that there has ever been an enumerated power delegated to the federal government to be able to confer upon a woman a right to kill a child. I think that the idea that the federal courts even believe that they have the ability to just invent this right and overturn systematically Texas's ability to be able to decide for itself on this matter is absolutely infuriating. Yeah.
Gotcha. Another big lens is how's that reopening working? How's Governor Abbott handled it? Things you like, things you don't like. You don't have to run it through a complete comparison with him, but just what have your thoughts been about the Texas reopening versus other states, and how would you like to see that proceed?
Right. I'm not thrilled with the way that this is run. I'm in Texas State Guard. He's my commander chief. But the reality is I think that this particular case, he should have called a special session. The governor in Texas is intentionally a very weak governor. I think we want our representatives to decide when new laws created. The 1975 Disaster Act gave him some authority to do these things, but I don't think that the level of disaster that we've seen in COVID rises to the level that I think that bill kind of addresses. Also, the reality is that we have all these folks that their businesses have been summarily shut down. I think that they have just cause under Article 1, Section 17 of the Texas Constitution to demand compensation from the state because their property was confiscated for public use.
And last thing, since this seems, a lot of people say this says a lot about someone, however they answer it. So here we go. How's that Trump presidency working out for you?
I think it's been really interesting to see this. I was a huge Ted Cruz guy in 2016, but I have been very encouraged by what I've seen with President Trump over the last few years. I mean, he's systematically chipped away at a lot of regulation. I think that from working from the top, I mean, a man can only do so much, but I think he's done as much as we could possibly expect. So I've been really happy with what I've seen, and will obviously be voting for him in November.
Andy Hopper, he'd like you to vote for him on September 29th. So here we are with the website Hopper4TXSenate, the number 4, Hopper4TXSenate.com. Andy, it's a pleasure to meet you. Good luck and best to the family, and thank you very, very much for being on.
Hey, Mark, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Our pleasure. Andy Hopper, Hopper4TXSenate.com. All righty, 866-660-5759. Joe Biden politicizing the vaccine. The scandal out of Nashville where city and local government wanted to keep secret that the numbers were so encouraging, even out of the world of restaurants and bars. All this and more. You know, guys, what's hanging on during that entire thing? Let's go to Sulphur Springs and let's do a call before the break. Michael, that is you, and it's a pleasure to have you. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, Mark. I'm fine. Great show.
Thank you
for taking my call.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. Fox 17 has reported that back in June, when the Nashville government was doing contact tracing, they definitely saw some nursing homes and constructions were hot spots.
Yep.
But the number of reported cases from bars and restaurants was just so low. They were concerned that, and they had enforced a closure on bars and restaurants.
Right.
They were concerned that that data not get out. And when questioned on it, they had to internally figure out how they were going to answer it. And they chose to kind of obfuscate that data. But it was really interesting to see these leaked emails that Fox 17 is reporting, that the mayor's office didn't want to release that data because it wouldn't back up the need to close bars and restaurants.
That's right. This is just superb local journalism. And we have that often around here, but this is just an enormous beam of light focused on this. The Fox affiliate in Nashville found that the Leslie Waller from the health department asks, quote, "This isn't going to be publicly released, right? Just info for the mayor's office?" And the answer comes out, correct, not for public consumption, says a senior advisor named Benjamin Eagles. A month later, health department was asked point blank about a rumor that there are only 80 cases in a huge city like Nashville traced to bars and restaurants. A reporter from the Tennessean says the figure you gave of 80 leads to a natural question. If there have been over 20,000 positive cases of COVID-19 in Davidson County, only 80 are traced to restaurants and bars. Doesn't that mean restaurants and bars aren't a very big problem? And then health department official Brian Todd fanned out across 5 health department officials saying, please advise how you recommend I respond. What's your takeaway from that?
that there is definitely an agenda. I mean, I hate conspiracy theories, but there's, you know, people take a position. They don't want to be wrong on this position. And when the data shows that what they're doing isn't supported, rather than come out and say, oh, you know what, we were wrong. It's crazy.
That is it. Michael, thank you. I'm glad we went to you. I appreciate it. Thank you for hanging on. And I will always try to give people benefit of the doubt, because this just looks so bad. And I'm thinking, okay, what might have been, what might have been their justifiable motivation for this kind of secretive approach? Maybe it's that they thought that the low incidence of infection in the traceable to bars and restaurants was just kind of temporary. And if they jumped at it and all of a sudden reopened bars and restaurants, and then all of a sudden there was a massive super spreader event from the, you know, whatever, the Broadway, the street in Nashville, where they've got all the bars and restaurants and clubs, and they'd come back and go, the blood is on your hands. I guess that's always a concern. I mean, as we look at Governor Abbott today at noon, and he's going to be offering up some updates on the Texas. We're going to probably move toward a little more openness. Restaurants may go from 50% to 75%. And I know a lot of people are clamoring and saying, you know, it's 25 too low. It ought to be 100, you dictator. You know, the guy cannot win. And he's trying to walk this line between being as open as a lot of people want us to be and yet as cautious as a lot of other people want us to be. And where exactly is that line struck? But I think the caller had it exactly right, that what the last thing a public official wants, especially at the city level, state level, city level, is to be shown evidence that a shutdown instinct, a restrictive instinct, was not necessary. that they went too far in terms of a shutdown. Now, listen, in my personal effort to be fair and accommodating in this, because I get to come do talk shows for a living, I get to mouth off and say things, and y'all can agree or disagree, and I go home, and life is great, and I, you know, love all people. If you are an elected official, you are going to get blasted from all sides at all times. And it seems to me the way to do this is if somebody had an instinct toward cautiousness, and then there's evidence that the caution that you can let up on the cautiousness, you let up on the cautiousness, and you say, "Well, boy, so it's not as bad as maybe we thought." So guess what? We're going to give people some of their liberty back, and maybe that's the process that we're on, and maybe that's what we'll see from the governor and lieutenant governor today, and then we'll have all day tomorrow to talk about that. So we'll see how that goes. Right? It's 9:24 when we come back. Here's what you don't do. This incredible moment of audio where Joe Biden yesterday said we can't politicize the vaccine, and then within 30 seconds politicizes the vaccine. 9:24. You'll hear it next.
Goodbye, Joe. Me gotta go. Me oh my.
1952.
Me gotta go pull the payroll down to buy
him. Hank Williams, Little Jambalaya.
Yvonne, the sweetest one, me oh my.
On Hank's birthday.
Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bio.
Well, we're having big fun on the talk show bio. Listen, it's 9:30. Let me get in news on time. Come back and let's give Joe an opportunity to ramp up to the moment where he says, let's not politicize the vaccine, and then politicizes the vaccine. But this Nashville thing, man, I got to tell you, one of those emails said, my two cents, we have refused to give counts per bar because those numbers are low per site. We could still release the total, though, and then a response to the over 80 could be because that number's increasing all the time and we don't want to say a specific number. This kind of treachery to conceal good news from the people of Nashville is just one of example after example after example after example of some in public office who are so wedded to their own shutdown narratives, unwilling to follow the trail of good news. Everybody always says, follow the science, follow the science, follow the science. Well, here's the science of tracing and tracking the virus in Nashville, and there's a whole suffering, wounded, dying industry, the bars of Nashville, and it was an opportunity for them to maybe open up a little more and make a little money, and overly cautious officials and shutdown addicted officials didn't want to do that. 9:32, Mark Davis into the newsroom we go. Here's Gordon Griffin.
I come in last night about a 10:30. That baby of mine wouldn't let me in. So moving on over.
Okay, so here's the deal.
Rocking on over.
This song's been in my head for 2 hours. Because we played Hank Williams doing it in the 7 o'clock hour. It's today's earworm. You'll be walking around middle of the afternoon. Moving on over. The growl of George Thorogood and the Delaware Destroyers. So here's the reason I did this. Number one, it's in my head and I can't get it out. And now I've put it in your head. So haha. That was 1978. George Thorogood and the Destroyers. Wonderful, underappreciated band on their introductory album called, appropriately enough, Move It On Over. Also on there is Ooh, Do You Love? All the Georgia songs sound exactly alike, but they're all good. But there is also on there a version of a song you'll know if you're a Stevie Ray Vaughan fan. Thorogood and the Destroyers did a wonderful take of The Sky Is Crying, which is an old Elmore James record. Anyway, though, so I'm thinking about this. I said, listen, everybody knows the George Thorogood Move It On Over. Do they know that Hank Williams wrote it and released it in 1947? Then I started to play the timeline game, which just makes me crazy, because here's the deal, right? So when George is sitting around thinking, how about if we do a revisit of Hank Williams' Move It On Over? It was 1978 they did that. At that time, it was a 31-year-old record. And I'm sure they felt like they were reaching back eons, back into the deep history of music to do something iconic. And they were. 31 years. if somebody's doing that today, reaching back 31 years, they're doing a revisit of Billy Joel, We Didn't Start the Fire. They're doing a visit of B-52's Love Shack. They're doing a revisit of Paula Abdul, straight up. Oh, man. Sid, if you play, the timeline game is take a chunk of time and then stretch it out backward from somewhere else. If you want to do the ultimate, probably, and the older you are, the weirder this gets. I'm 62, okay? I'll be 63 here in November. Woohoo! And so let's say that I am standing at a, if you ever do this again, in a hospital where the newborn babies are. Let's say some family member of mine has a brand new baby and some future date where you're able to go actually see the baby and blah, blah, blah in the hospital. And let's say I'm standing there, okay? I'm standing there looking at a baby in the hospital today, right? Imagine if someone were standing at the window of Baptist Memorial Hospital when I was born in San Antonio, November 13th, 1957. By the way, the exact same birth date as Governor Abbott. He's my birthday buddy. Exact same day. When I was San Antonio, he was Wichita Falls. Anyway, if a 62-year-old is standing through the window looking at me, which is getting kind of creepy, what's he there for? Security, security. That person would have been born in 1895. During, I guess that would have been like the second Grover Cleveland administration. It's the timeline game. Play it at your own risk. Oh, my heavens to Betsy. All right, I want you to hear the full... the full unfolding of the Joe Biden politicization of the vaccine. I'll do that here in a second, but let's hit some phone call action real quick. First, we are in Red Oak. Hey, Tim, Mark Davis. Welcome. How are you?
Good morning. Hey, buddy. Listening to you last night on Larry Elder.
Thank you. It was fun.
Yeah, very good. And a guy called in, just a quick question. A guy called in and he had some kind of a hashtag. He says, comply. But I can't remember the second word. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, it was comply, don't die. He said he had come up with a snappy hashtag T-shirt, whatever, with everybody thinking, especially folks of color, thinking if I walk out of the house, the evil racist cops are going to kill me before I could even get to 7-Eleven, get to school, get to wherever I'm going. And he said his good advice was comply, don't die. That if you take a look at all these police situations that have gotten out of hand, that by and large, universally, they involve people refusing to submit to the commands of the officer. And even if the officer is wheels off, things are going south, things are crazy, he's got a problem, whatever, live to tell the tale, man. Live to file the complaint the following day. Because if you resist, your chances of getting shot go way up.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
That was it.
That was well done.
That was it. Comply, don't die. A public service campaign from a gentleman who called us. I think that was a Texas call. Was it a Texas caller? They all blur together. Okay. Bum, bum, bum. That was Larry Elder last night. That was a lot of fun. All right, here's Joe. So, and this is useful because I play a lot of Trump audio. As you know, we're keeping track of, you know, what's going on in the president's head and his messaging and such. But it's certainly as important to keep track of what we're up against here and what, you know, how Joe Biden's going to do. And every moment of his extemporaneously, as this was with reporters yesterday, we got to see what he brings to the table as well in terms of style and content. So let's just kind of track this along, break it down a little bit frame by frame, and see if this strikes you the way that it did me. Where a minute or so in, Mr. Biden will guard against politicizing the vaccine, and then barely before he takes another breath, he politicizes the vaccine. Let's enjoy.
These scientists carry the hopes of our nation, our entire nation, and the entire world. When their work comes to fruition, and it will, there will be no doubt it will save lives.
So far, so good. Optimism, good wishes for the great minds working on a vaccine. So far, so good.
But scientific breakthroughs don't care about calendars any more than the virus does. They certainly don't adhere to election cycles.
What? A, who doesn't know that? B, why say that? The suggestion here is, and what Joe wants you to believe, is that President Trump is in the lab, snapping his fingers, saying, come on, we need this thing by the 3rd of November. I don't care if it's safe. Come on, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go.
And their timing, their approval, and their distribution should never, ever be distorted by political considerations.
Who in the world thinks they are? Who has the slightest shred of evidence that that is happening?
It should be determined by science and safety alone. A vaccine would offer a way back to normalcy and a path toward better days for all of us, not only here, but around the world. But it's not going to happen overnight.
No one says it's going to happen overnight.
And once we have it, it's going to take months to distribute it to the entire population.
And by the way, that's true, too. But that process may be underway. It may be underway as Election Day happens, or once we get to Election Day, which is, you know, 6.5 weeks from now, that we could have some kind of expected date on the near horizon. It is optimism. It is hope. And these things are kryptonite to Joe Biden and the Democrats. It is the worst news possible to have America with a lifted heart, lifted expectations, the notion of some ray of hope to guide us through this nightmare. I got to tell you, if your candidacy is hurt by good news, there's something wrong with your candidacy.
I'm more hopeful than ever in the power of science to get us there. But one thing is certain. We can't allow politics to interfere with the vaccine in any way.
Okay, so there he is there. So let's start the clock right there. We can't allow politics to interfere with the vaccine in any way. Do not politicize the vaccine, and go.
Americans have had to endure President Trump's incompetence and dishonesty.
5 seconds, but he's not even done.
When it comes to testing and personal protective equipment, we can't afford to repeat those fiascos. When it comes to a vaccine, when it occurs, the stakes are too high. American families have already suffered and sacrificed too much.
And you ready? You ready for the big finish? Mr. Don't politicize the vaccine.
So let me be clear. I trust vaccines. I trust scientists. But I don't trust Donald Trump.
I know it's a political campaign, especially in the era of Trump. Sharp elbows are to be expected. And by the way, that's fine. That right there, that is sinister. Because I don't care what your feelings are about the president. I mean, obviously, it's Joe Biden's job to cast aspersions on the president. You're running against somebody. You're going to say all kinds of uncomplimentary things about him. That's fine. You know, you're going to say the person's ideas are wrong, his character is goofy, you don't like this, you don't like that, in his past, his present, the way he talks, the way he walks, the suits he wears, whatever. All kinds of negativity is to be expected. But this is a different moment. This is a different issue. I mean, the specific angle of the COVID issue in which we now, as I've said at the beginning of today's show, there's only one human way to feel. And if you deviate from this, there's something the matter with you. And that is to have hope and expectations and good wishes and prayers for success for the people who are crafting a vaccine. And in God's timing, it will happen. But to cast aspersions on it, to clearly seek to sow doubt, to foment bad feelings about the vaccine because it might start to happen before November 3rd, which disadvantages your presidential campaign, that is a dark way to do business, man. That is a terrible, terrible thing to do. But gosh, Joe used to be so nice. Well, that guy's long gone. Today's show is almost gone. I got one Hank Williams song left in the chamber, and let's see what it is as we celebrate Hank's birthday on the way out and hand things over to Mike Gallagher. 9:51, Mark Davis.
Nearly 22.
When Hank Jr. on, what was it, All My Rowdy Friends Have Settled Down, sings, "I think I know what my father meant when he sang about a lost highway." This is Lost Highway. 1949 by Hank Williams, born 97 years ago today. Hank did not write this. The Blind Balladeer, Leon Payne, wrote this previous year. It has been an enjoyable visit through the Hank Williams catalog on Hank's birthday. And an enjoyable visit with you from producer Rhonda K. Moreland. At producer Rhonda K, R-O-N-D-A, capital K, to technical guru Shane Bell. Shane Bell Band on Twitter, Facebook, etc. Look for his musical exploits and appearances to be announced soon. And news ace Gordon Griffin, God bless our country, our troops, our flag, our anthem, our first responders. Have a great rest of your Thursday. See you tomorrow for the Friday show right here on 660 AM, The Answer. Follow me on Twitter, @MarkDavis, and we will see you soon.